Today on Lasting Hope, Pastor Greg Spires.
I don't care how far down you plumb the depths of your sin, His grace is bigger. But you will never see the extent of His grace if you refuse to acknowledge the extent of your sin. We seem to forget our problem is our sin. The problem is we need saving, we need redemption, we need to be made new. Why would God save us? He wants us to see our real need.
Welcome to Lasting Hope with Bible teacher Greg Spires, pastor of FBC in Medford, Oregon. Moses, sent to deliver the enslaved Israelites, soon became discouraged because he was too impressed by Pharaoh and not impressed enough by God. However, God promised that not only would Pharaoh let the children of Israel leave, he would eventually drive them out. But coming up, Pastor Greg assures us that it wasn't the trustworthiness of God in question, it was the Israelites' inability to recognize what their true need in fact was. Let's listen now.
Well, the question you might ask yourself as we look at the people of Israel in Egypt and we wonder, here comes God who's going to rescue them out of Egypt. You should ask this question. I think it's a fair question. Why would God save Israel? And connected to that, why would God save us? Why would God save us? Look at Exodus 5, 22 and 23. Moses, of course, had confronted Pharaoh and said, let my people go. And Pharaoh said, I don't think so. I'm going to make your work really hard, and I think I'm going to kill all the Hebrews. People of Israel sort of freaked out. Moses sort of freaks out, and he prays this prayer. Moses turned to the Lord and said, O Lord, this is Exodus 5:22, why have you done evil to this people? Why did you ever send me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he's done evil to this people. You have not delivered your people at all. Why, O Lord, did you send me to save the people? You're not doing the job. Something we need to understand as we try to answer this question, why would God save us, is this. And we're going to use this sort of as a way of understanding what God is up to. It turns out there was more at stake in Egypt than whether or not Moses had a good day. It turns out whether or not things went well for Moses was not the priority God had in saving Israel. Did you notice that? First of all, why would God save us? Look at verse 14. It's a genealogy. I'm not going to read it all. You're welcome. You can read it on your own. Why would God save us? First thing, He wants us to see His trustworthiness. Why would God save us? First of all, He wants us to see His trustworthiness. God comes to Moses and says, I want to save you. And one of the reasons is I want to demonstrate my trustworthiness. Look at verse 14. These are the heads of their fathers' houses. Here's how Israel was organized. God called Abraham. Who knows Father Abraham? Many sons? Okay, good. Had Abraham. Abraham had a promise given him to by God that he would have lots of kids and he would have a land. So Abraham had a promise made to him, and that promise carried on to Isaac. So Isaac was the son of the covenant. Isaac then had a son, and his son's name was Jacob. And Jacob was the son of the covenant. Now, Abraham, Isaac, and Isaac had other sons, but they weren't sons of the covenant. The son of the promise is Jacob. And Jacob had a new name, which was Israel. So all of the sons of Israel are the sons and daughters of the promise of God. I will give you a land, and you will be my people. Here's what God is saying through this little genealogy. I made a promise to Abraham. I made a promise to Isaac. I made a promise to Jacob, and I mean to keep it. Listen, the Bible is telling us about God's intervention in human history to make a way for sinners to have a relationship with God. He's been doing this since the beginning, since Adam and Eve. He says, I'm going to tell you about my mission to save sinners through human history, and that history of God intervening to provide salvation to us only matters because God can be trusted. His promise to save sinners through the people of Israel, His promise to save sinners through the Messiah, is only useful because God is trustworthy. Since God is trustworthy, His promises are certain. And since God is trustworthy, His promises are the only thing that matter. Why would God save us? What's the first one? He wants us to see he is trustworthy. All right, let's keep going backwards. Back to verse 9. Back to verse 9 of Exodus chapter 6. God says this to Moses in verse 8, I'm going to bring you out of the land. I'm going to give you a possession. And Moses spoke to the people of Israel, and they didn't listen to Moses because of their broken spirit and their harsh slavery. Why would God save us? Verses 9 through 13, he wants us to see our need. The people of Israel cannot hear the good news that God is redeeming them because of that which they need redeeming from. They had a broken spirit because of their harsh slavery. They couldn't see the forest for the trees. They needed saving from their slavery, but their slavery was making it impossible for them to see they needed saving. Just like Israel here doesn't see their need. They need rescuing from slavery, but because of the situation they're in, they don't know what they need. Moses here is seeing nothing but failure. He's gone to Pharaoh and been rejected. He's gone to Israel and been rejected. And he sees nothing but failure, nothing but inadequacy, nothing but more trouble on the horizon. And what we discover about God is God sees absolute success in what's happening. Because God understood what Israel needed before they could experience his redemption, they needed to not only know they needed deliverance, they needed to feel it. And look at how they're described. A broken spirit under their harsh slavery. God knows they need to truly plumb the depths of how difficult a situation they're in before they're going to be ready to respond to his rescue. He wants us to see our need. Why is this so important? Later on in the wilderness, the people of Israel are going to run into hard times again. And this is what they're going to say to Moses. They're going to say, Moses, why did you take us out of Egypt, that land flowing with milk and honey? Why is that an important phrase? Because God, in his covenant, told his people, I will take you and to a land that is flowing with milk and honey. So what are they saying? The trouble we're experiencing right now tells us it would be better to be under slavery than to be with God. God's plan is worse than the slavery we were under. God knew this would happen, so he understands what he's doing here, everything possible to help the people of Israel understand exactly what's going on. They need deliverance from slavery, and until they feel it at the core of their being, they are never going to understand what they need. Look what God commands Moses to do in verse 11 of Exodus 6. Go in, tell Pharaoh, king of Israel, to let the people of Israel go out of his land. What's Moses' job? Go and tell. Is his job to convince Pharaoh? No. Is his job to put the pitch on him? Come up with the key selling points? No. Threaten him? His job is to go and tell. What was his job with the people of Israel? Go and tell. Moses' job is to go and tell. It's God's job to redeem, God's job to bring out, God's job to deliver. Moses' job is to go and tell the truth. And here's something we need to understand about the gospel. The gospel always tells the truth. Why would God save us? Because he wants us to see our need. And the good news of the gospel is you have need. When I was in high school, I got pneumonia. So I went to the doctor. He said, you take these antibiotics, you're going to feel better. Turns out I did. I was thankful for that. He had to tell me I had pneumonia. He had to tell me the truth. He didn't tell me I had an ingrown toenail. He told me I had pneumonia. I need antibiotics. This is the gospel. The gospel tells us the truth. You need redemption because you're a sinner. Israel needed out of Egypt because they were slaves. We need redemption because of our sin. The gospel always tells us the truth. The good news that Jesus died on the cross is useless if you don't have a sin problem. Your sin is your problem. You've got a sin problem. Sin kills you and it destroys everything in your life. Your envy is a problem. You think everybody else has it better than you. It drives you nuts that that guy can't do his job halfway decent, makes more money than you, has a bigger house than you. It drives you nuts that that guy's wife is nicer than your wife. It drives you nuts that those kids of your friends, why are they so good? Why can't they steal something? The parents are terrible. They're horrible parents. Why do the horrible parents get such good kids? Now, none of us have ever thought this way before, right? Why does he get to drive that car? Our envy. We must have what others have. It will destroy our lives. Our sin is our problem when we see and look at what others have and are convinced we ought to. We rank better than them. We work harder than them. I know God better than them. And God seems to be blessing the socks off of that moron. You've never thought this way before. Yes, you have. Now we got to talk about lying. What about your pride? Yeah, I need God a little. At least I'm not like that guy. He needs God a lot. Well, I'm glad he found God because he needs him a lot more than I do. You ever noticed how you know how to do everything right? That's called pride. Have you ever noticed that everybody does their best, but it's just too bad they can't measure up? That's called pride. Have you ever noticed that luckily you only have rated G sins, not rated PG and R sins like your buddies and the people you know? That's called pride, and it will kill you. It will destroy you. What's your number when it comes to greed? What's the magic number? If I had X, everything would be fine. What is it about your current situation where you can take it easy and rest? If that thing is not God, it's greed. Here's what we need to understand about our sin. These aren't hang-ups. These aren't little character flaws. These aren't little things I'm going to work on. These aren't good thing New Year's is coming up, I can do another resolution. Your sin is your problem, and it's a death sentence. Jesus did not die on the cross because you have a couple of character flaws. Your sin is your problem, and he died on the cross because you're a sinner, and if you had been given half a chance, you would have nailed his hands to the beam. Look at verse 9 again of Exodus 6. Moses spoke thus to the people, and they would not listen. So let's just be honest. I've just given a little diatribe on some sins. There's many others we could cover. I just don't have time. Most of you aren't listening. You've already come up with reasons. Yeah, come on, it's not a big deal. Now, listen, I got issues. Listen, sin is not one of them. Or are you going to blame others? Well, sure, I wouldn't envy if I had more stuff. Sure, I'd love my spouse more and wouldn't be envious of my buddy if I had a better spouse. Sure, I wouldn't look at other people's kids if my kids would behave. This is what you think. It's not my problem. It's not my fault. In fact, the people around me should stop flaunting their good lives so much. That's what they should do. We argue with God. We shift the blame. We seem to forget our problem is our sin. That is the problem. The problem starts in our own heart. The sin inside of us, as Paul Tripp has said, is worse than the sin around us. The problem is we need saving. We need redemption. We need to be made new. Why would God save us? He wants us to see our real need. And I don't care how far down you plumb the depths of your sin, his grace is bigger. But you will never see the extent of his grace if you refuse to acknowledge the extent of your sin. Why would God save us? He wants us to see our need. A video came out, another video was online, you can Google it if you want. Got a couple named Steve and Heather Winfrey, maybe you've heard of them. Steve, since he was 18, he'd had a kidney disorder, kidney failure, I guess is what you call it. And one thing led to another. It turns out that his wife was a donor match for her husband. She revealed to him that she was a match through baseball cards. They did baseball cards together, and she revealed that we're a match. And sure enough, she donated the kidney to her husband, save his life. Why would God save us? God's nature, just like Steve's wife, God's nature fits our need, which is a need of redemption. Why would God save us? He wants us to know him as the Redeemer God. Who he is fits our need. Just like Steve's wife's kidney fit him. I think of it this way. Your house catches on fire, so you call the fire department. And first, you're obviously going to post it on Facebook, and then you call the fire department. My understanding is how that works now. House is on fire. Hashtag burning. Just call the fire department. Just call the fire department. The fire department comes. They put the fire out. Talking to the firefighter. And you say, I am so grateful that you became a firefighter to put out my house. The firefighter, I was glad to put out your house. I didn't come a firefighter to put out your house. I became a firefighter. That's what I wanted to do. I mean, you happen to also need my services, so I'm glad to help. No. I know how it works. You grew up, wanted to be a firefighter because my house would one day catch on fire. And so you went to training, think of my address, 617 Main Street, and you had that in a poster above your locker, and couldn't wait for the day when you fulfill your dream to put the fire out in my house. Like, you're an idiot. Why would God save us? He wants us to know him as the Redeemer God, that this is what he is like. His nature is a God who saves. Look again at verse 6. We read it earlier. I am the Lord. I will bring you out of Egypt, out of your burdens. I will redeem you out of slavery with an outstretched arm. I will take you to be my people. He says this, I am your Lord. I will bring you out. My nature is a bringing you out of slavery kind of God. And he's going to do this with such power and such force that later on, Moses is just going to be flabbergasted. He says this in Deuteronomy 3, O Lord God, you have only begun to show your servant your greatness and your mighty hand. For what God is there in heaven or on earth who can do such works and mighty acts as you have? Who can do what God does? No one. Moses puts it another way here in Deuteronomy 3, if we understand it right. He says, who can do what God does? No one can. But let's just pretend for a minute there was a guy. Let's call him Bill. And he could do what God does. He could do 10 plagues and Passover and Red Sea. He could do all that. He wouldn't, but God would. That's what he's saying here. He says, no one can do what I can do. And even if there was one who would, nobody else would. Only I would, God is saying. Only I have both the power and the nature that says, I want to save people like you. Look at verse 7 again of Exodus chapter 6. I will take you to be my people. I will be your God. You shall know I am the Lord your God. This is what we call a promise. A promise of God is so certain because of God's promise-keeping nature, it's as good as done. When God makes a promise to his people, I will take you as my people, he's saying, you're my people. I will save you, which means you're saved. I will redeem you, which means you're redeemed. We see this over in Romans chapter 8, and we must let this settle into our heart. The Bible says this in Romans 8:18, I consider that the sufferings of this present time aren't worth comparing to the glory that is to be revealed in us. That's a promise to those of us who are believers. God will reveal glory in us, which means what? He is revealing glory in us, because a promise made by God is a promise kept by God. To live now in Christ, even in suffering, is to live a life of glory, even if we may not see it. God is the promise-keeping God, and he redeems people like the people of Israel. This whole passage in Exodus chapter 6 begins in verse 1, and he says this, the Lord said to Moses, now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. Now you're in a position where you see your need. Now you're in a position where only my mighty hand will save you. I will bring you out. I will redeem you. I will deliver you. One final thing to look at, and we're going to close with this. Look at verses 3 and 4. This is astounding. God says this to Abraham. You know what? I appeared to Abraham, I appeared to Isaac, and I appeared to Jacob, but by my name, the Lord, I did not make myself known to them. That's a difficult verse to translate accurately, so I'm going to sum up what he's saying here. Abraham knew me. Isaac knew me. Jacob, he knew me. But Moses, you're going to see me do Exodus. They don't even know the half of it. You are going to know me, Moses, as the Redeemer God who redeems people out of slavery. Moses, they knew me. They don't know me like you know me. Because you will know me as the God who redeems people out of slavery. Abraham sort of had an idea of this in Genesis chapter 15 when God was making the covenant with Abraham. He told him, hey, listen, your people are going to be in a foreign land for like 400 years and I'm going to save them out of Israel. But Moses, you get to see it happen. Abraham sort of knew me. Isaac knew me. Jacob knew me. But because Moses, you get to see my promise kept, you know me in a whole other way. You know me as the God, the Redeemer out of Exodus. One author has said it this way, that Exodus out of Egypt, as it fits in and shows us what redemption looks like, is the primary way we know who God is. That God is a Redeemer. He is the one who saves. We're talking about Steve and Heather, the kidney duo. I wonder if she makes him wake up every morning and say, hey, thanks for the kidney. I know I would. So the question is, before she had herself tested to find out if she was a match, was she a match? Was she a match before they got married? How about this? Was she a match before they met? So we think God is the Redeemer God because we sinned? He wasn't a Redeemer God before that? This is what he's trying to tell us. No, this is who I am. I didn't change. You didn't paint me into a corner and go, what am I going to do? I better be a Redeemer God, I guess. What am I going to do? He is Redeemer God. He has always been Redeemer God. And our need fits his nature perfectly. He is one who redeems, and we are ones who need to be redeemed. He is a Redeemer God by nature, not by necessity. And what the author of Exodus, Moses, was saying is God is telling him, because you get to see this nature revealed in Exodus, Moses, you're going to know me even more than Abraham did. So where does that put you and I? Hebrews chapter 1, verse 1. Long ago, at many times and in many ways, if you have the authorized version, in sundry times and diverse manners. That's just fun to read. I've got the ESV. Long ago, at many times and in many ways, God spoke to our fathers by the prophets. So a long time ago, God spoke to us in many times, many ways, through the prophets. Now I'm going to suggest the way the book of Hebrews starts, he's going to emphasize Christ as superior to Moses and the tabernacle and the temple. So I might suggest when he says, of the prophets, and chief among them is Moses. In many times and in various ways in the past, God spoke to our fathers by the prophets like Moses. But in these last days, he has spoken to us by his what? Son. Moses, you know God so much better than Abraham did. And now God comes to you. What's he say? Moses didn't have a clue. You know me by my son. My son, whom he appointed the heir of all things, through whom he also created the world. He is the radiance of the glory of God, the exact imprint of his nature, and he upholds the universe by the word of his power. After making purification for your sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. Moses knew me, but not like this. You know Jesus. And the Bible tells us in Acts 4:12, what does it say? There is salvation in no one else. There is no other name under heaven given among men by which we must be saved. And what is that name? There is now, therefore, no other name under heaven given among men whereby we must be saved. And his name is Jesus.
Pastor Greg Spires revealing the spiritual application to believers today of the promised redemption to Moses and the children of Israel from Exodus chapter 6 in a message titled, Why Would God Save Us? And you're listening to Lasting Hope, and I hope you'll stick around for Pastor Greg's concluding remarks in just a moment. But first, if you'd like more information about Pastor Greg or the various ministries of FBC in Medford, Oregon, just visit lastinghope.org. While you're there, you can also sign up for Pastor Greg's weekly Lasting Hope newsletter. In it, Greg shares biblical wisdom, encouragement, and hope. Just sign up when you go to lastinghope.org. And if you have a question for Pastor Greg or would like to share your story of faith with him, you can email him at greg@lastinghope.org. That's greg@lastinghope.org. And if you don't have a church home of your own, we invite you to join Greg for our online service Sunday mornings at 9:30 and 11 a.m. You can join us for worship and a message from Pastor Greg. Just go to lastinghope.org at 9:30 or 11 a.m. on Sunday and click on the link at the top of the website that says Watch Service Live. Again, go to lastinghope.org. Finally, Lasting Hope is committed to bringing people into a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And if you'd like to know more about what it means to know God, we have a special page on our website that will walk you through the steps to knowing God. Just go to lastinghope.org and click on the link, Knowing God. Again, that's lastinghope.org. Now here again is Pastor Greg reinforcing that God's promise of redemption has indeed been fulfilled in the work of his Son.
Jesus is the saving God. Why would he save us? So we could see that he's trustworthy. How do we know he's trustworthy? Try and find him in a tomb. He's not there, by the way. He rose from the dead. That's trustworthy. Why would he save us? We have to know our need. Woman at the well, he told me everything I ever did. He knows everything you've ever done. Why would God save us? Because he wants us to know him. He is Redeemer God, and we are those who need to be redeemed. What this tells us is the resurrection of Jesus Christ is the act of salvation for all of human history. The resurrection of Jesus Christ was the climax of the redemptive story. God says, it is finished, puts an exclamation point on it, kicks the stone away from the tomb and walks out. Why would God save us? He is trustworthy. He wants us to know our need, and he wants us to know him as Redeemer God.
Pastor Greg Spires closing out a message called, How Does God Help? Here on Lasting Hope. And that's all the time we have for today, but please join us next time as we begin a new message titled, He is the Lord. That's next time on Lasting Hope with Pastor Greg Spires. Lasting Hope is the radio ministry of FBC in Medford, Oregon.